I think most of you know that Elder Maxwell is a lifelong educator. He knows the joy of closing that door and being alone with his students and a piece of chalk. He taught political science at the University of Utah before becoming an administrator there. He was executive vice president at the University of Utah. At the time, he was called by President Harold B. Lee to become Commissioner of Education. As Commissioner of Education, he was responsible for the affairs of Ricks College for several years in the early 70s. And then he was called as an assistant to the 12 and finally as a member of the Quorum of the 12, in which capacity he has continued having responsibility for activities here because of his membership on our Board of Trustees. We're deeply grateful to you, Elder Maxwell, that you'd take time from a very hectic schedule to be with us today. We appreciate you. We look forward to hearing from you at this time.
I can't be present on an occasion such as this, brothers and sisters, without deep feelings of gratitude for Ricks College and all that it represents. I wonder how many college students in any college in the world have a chance to be taught from the scriptures, as some have here by President Hafen and by Sister Hafen. How many college presidents' wives also teach a course in Shakespeare? The Ricks experience includes for you, and I hope you at least have begun to appreciate it, a spiritual connection with the administration and faculty here that is a very, very special thing and is not replicated in the world. I found myself also rejoicing in like manner that you have a faculty here, as you well know, who are symbolized by that touching story President Hafen told of Hugh Benyon and Sister Benyon. I'm just grateful to be here and would say to you, this is a college that other college presidents would crave to preside over if they knew about it. And your kind of student body and this kind of faculty. I'm grateful to sit with Commissioner Christensen and President Hafen. We've had so many times together over the years, and I'm always better when I'm in their company. And I'm grateful for that privilege again. I want to commend the spouses of this wonderful faculty for their constant support and for the founders of this college. I was thinking as I sat here, this is a college in a way that epitomizes the 58th section of the Doctrine and Covenants. People on their own initiative established an academy here, and only later did it achieve the support and sponsorship of the church. Something good was done because it needed to be done. And how many lives have been blessed because of those founders, all of those supporters who were so good in the difficult early days. I do take this opportunity, brothers and sisters, to express appreciation for the quiet, undemonstrative devotion of the tithe payers of the church, for their wise and generous and continuing investment in this college and campus. And I congratulate you as graduates for having passed an academic milestone. For some of you, this will be the end of your formal education. For still others, it is a finish line, which is also a starting line, marking the end of lower division work and the beginning of upper division work on another campus. By the way, I encourage more of you to think in terms of additional education than may have already done so. So much of your life later on is going to depend upon the thoroughness with which you are educated and prepared now. Please don't pitch your tent too soon on this educational Everest. Climb as far as you can. Now, later on, some of the rest of you are going to come back to education because of stirrings and yearnings and perhaps changes in your circumstances. You'll resume your formal education. But whichever the case, brothers and sisters, this commencement marks the next day, the next month, and the next year of your lives. Because there is so much variety among you as Rick's graduates, I've chosen for today a somewhat different theme. Many commencement speakers, and alas, I plead guilty to having been among them, ironically address and even exhort graduating students as if they were just arriving on campus instead of leaving. Some commencement speeches also indicate to graduates that the world is being turned over to them. In fact, such will not happen, at least not this week or this month, for you. Commencement speeches also traditionally inventory the very bruised and damaged condition of the world, which is being handed over to the graduates, who are then urged and exhorted to make dramatic and immediate improvements therein. There's nothing wrong with such oratory, but it seems to me to be wide of the mark in some respects. Some few of you may actually make your way to the nation and the world's centers of economic and political power. However, most of you will not. You will enrich the world, but without shaping it dramatically or in its entirety. However, most of you will be parents. All of you will be neighbors, and all of you will be citizens. These roles will emerge within the small but very important universes of your experience. Whether in Firth or Philadelphia, Denver or Downey, you're going to be citizens and neighbors, and most of you parents. And this will comprise your individual futures. Furthermore, within these settings, you will find sufficient challenges to sober you and to stretch you. It seems appropriate, therefore, today to ask you to reflect upon what your education at Rick's has done to help you. Now, therefore, as the sights and sounds of the campus begin to fade in the long, busy years, which specific memories of Rick's will guide you, prod you, caress you, and nourish you? Your days on the campus were, after all, but for a small moment. You'll recall Jacob worked a long 7 years for Rachel, but they seemed to him, we read in Genesis, to be but a few days. If 7 years are a few days, then your 2 years at Rick's College were but an academic afternoon. Even so, what will you now take with you in your luggage as you leave Rick's, which was not there when you arrived? Granted, some of what will be in your luggage is tucked in so subtly that for now you will hardly notice it, let alone appreciate it. May I suggest, therefore, perhaps in conversation with your spouse, your parents, or trusted friends, that you soon select 3 things which, as you inventory your experiences at Rick's, clearly constitute something gained. Of course, I can only suggest you're making this inventory. It is yours to make or not to make, and probably only a few of you will actually do it. But those who do will be blessed. In my own education, for instance, I soon found that the basic gospel truths, which were so impressive, could be harmonized with the great secular truths. Moreover, those few gospel truths, which for the moment could not be harmonized, could nevertheless be regarded expectantly, for ultimately all truths belong to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Not all theories, mind you, nor all fleeting facts, but all truths. To so realize for me as a young man that this was so was a very emancipating feeling. It was then that kind of feeling, it is now that kind of feeling, and that feeling has never left me. I also saw at your age, way back when, how much depended on knowing the truths pertaining to human nature. On that knowledge, so much else turned, including what type of political structure is best for man, what humans may safely aspire to achieve, and what lifestyles bring happiness. My formal education also humbled and taught me concerning how much I did not yet know, and likewise how subdivided and specialized knowledge is. That's not a bad introduction to the need for continuing education about which Commissioner Christensen and President Hafen have spoken. I ask you this, has any people in the world, anywhere, ever been given a greater charge with regard to continuing education, light and truth, than we have? Listen to this invitation, which is also a direction. That which is of God is light, and he that receiveth light and continueth in God receiveth more light, and that light groweth brighter and brighter until the perfect day. That's real continuing education. And the scriptures you've also been urged to stay close to tell us that whatsoever is truth is light. Education for me also, brothers and sisters, underscored the intrinsic beauty and the surprising power of words, especially if words are combined with a good cause and are used effectively and authentically by one with character. This quotation about Sir Winston Churchill speaks to that point. The source of Churchill's political strength, the author wrote, wasn't courage. Bravery is common. What distinguished Winston was his remarkable mastery of the language. As he used it, the English tongue was a weapon, but also a benediction. It fascinated him. He adored it, and he could spend hours musing over its charms and the ways to employ it with maximum effect. Winston Churchill's words rallied a whole nation. But your words can console and rally a friend, a family, or a neighborhood. And one need not be a Churchill to draw upon the power and the beauty of words. I pause to interpose an example of that in a very homely episode, but very powerful, a documentary done recently on the church. A number of our critics, as is often the case, managed to get themselves inserted in the process. Near the end of a long documentary about the church, the camera focused on a farmer in central Utah, and he was asked about the future of the church. And this was his eloquent but simple reply: "Well, I suppose it's going to get bigger, but it can't get any better." That's eloquence. And that was the benediction for that whole broadcast. But enough of my autobiography to illustrate the desirability of your pondering your Ricks College experience. Alas, brothers and sisters, so often in life we complete experiences like your brief academic afternoon at Ricks, and we quickly exit therefrom without even trying to squeeze out of an experience the vital generalizations and insights to be carried forward. Indeed, life's experiences can become like a series of overnight hotels. Soon, if we are not careful, the succession of such hotels become an indistinguishable blur on life's landscapes. It can and should be otherwise, however. Your continuing education in life will be facilitated, therefore, by having you identify now, as best you can, three things that influence most significantly your learning at Ricks. In any event, whatever is in your luggage as you leave will go with you, whichever direction you go. Could it be, however, that you will leave this campus with a greater appreciation of and appetite for good books? Comparatively few Americans now read out of the best books. Instead, we have indiscriminate watching of television, which takes its toll. For instance, heavy watchers of television tend to become spectators at almost everything else. And republics and democracies do not flourish with spectator citizens. They never have, they never will, and neither will ours. Will you depart from Ricks with more appreciation for the gift of life on this planet and what it means to have your turn thereon? Your afternoon here at Ricks would not have been possible without parental preparation and even sacrifice. How much more loving preparation occurred so long ago to prepare this carefully balanced planet for you. Isaiah said it well. "For thus saith the Lord that created the heavens, God himself that formed the earth and made it. He hath established it. He created it not in vain. He formed it to be inhabited." So much was done to prepare this place for you. I would hope and expect that you would leave here with more informed self-awareness. I do not mean by that the fashionable selfishness which is masquerading as individualism in America. that fashionable selfishness which empties so many Americans as they spend their lives in one-dimensional search for fulfillment. I mean, rather, do you at least have some added inklings of your identity and of your unused capacity? These inklings, if acted upon by you, can deservedly lift and enhance your self-esteem as you live in a world which tends to put people down. Believe in yourselves not only for what you now are, but for what you also have the power to become. And the Ricks experience should have given you some inklings of that. You are possibly leaving here, too, with a greater appreciation for the world of ideas and with some increased facility to process, evaluate, and to express such ideas. Ideas which are true and great provide the substance which sustains the life of the mind. The mind, too, requires calisthenics, even isometrics, for its health and continued development. You may not be able to prevent arthritis in your joints later on, but please don't become intellectually arthritic. Stretch your minds. Keep them active. If people can jog for their physical welfare, jog your mind with the scriptures and the great ideas so that it continues to be active and vibrant. Hopefully you will leave here too with some added discernment, including, among other things, the skill to differentiate between mere information and wisdom. Popular phrases like the knowledge explosion, the information revolution, when not used precisely and thoughtfully, ignore the stark reality that there is no democracy among facts. All facts are not of equal significance, and your education should help you to see that. Surely, too, with the undergirding of religious education on this campus, you should be leaving here with a greater appreciation for God, His Holy Scriptures, and for other people, all of whom are His spirit children, all of whom He loves just as perfectly and personally as He loves you. Additionally, your departure should mark the acquisition of added self-discipline. One of life's seeming paradoxes is that the more wise self-control we have, the more free we are. As you learn, therefore, to see yourselves not only for what you now are, but also for what you have the power to become, it will be self-discipline that will stretch your souls. Probably, too, your parents already seem wiser than 2 years ago. In any event, in your relationships, neither you nor your parents should let any impasses that might have occurred between you remain. Do not let your yesterdays hold your tomorrows hostage. Let your hearts be turned increasingly towards each other, and let your words, child to parent, be words of affection and appreciation. Touch each other verbally. Give each other what Paul and Peter called the holy kiss of affection. You will live in a world that is increasingly coarse. The gospel is designed to tame us, to tenderize us, and that must be so in your relations with your parents, so many of whom are here today. There is, in fact, no better expression of how the generation should relate to each other than occurs in this verse of Scripture. Condemn me not because of mine imperfection, neither my Father because of his imperfection, neither them who have written before him. But rather, give thanks unto God that he hath made you aware of our imperfections, that ye may learn to be more wise than we have been. How meek, how generous, how forward-looking. Such gospel perspective as that is so vital in viewing the generations, but also as you watch the nightly or morning news or read today's newspaper. Usually you will see, brothers and sisters, that the news merely reflects failures of one kind or another to observe the Ten Commandments. You can make your own box score, and that's how it will come out. What you will witness most of the time will be what I call the humdrum of hedonism. People who have involved themselves in immorality, infidelity, hostility, disloyalty, greed, that's the news. Don't hold your breath waiting for a news bulletin announcing that a prominent individual has begun at last to be honest or humble or faithful to spouse. From an eternal perspective, that would be good news. But the world cares little for the ephemeral and for the eternal and only the ephemeral. The world cares for the carnal, not the spiritual. And you must keep that gospel perspective. Don't lose your perspective in yet another way, by yielding to the temptation to wish you had lived in a different age. One would put it this way: of all the ages, I would rather have lived in the Victorian age, but with penicillin. You can't have the quietude of one age and the technology of another. One Book of Mormon prophet reflected upon what at first seemed to him to have been earlier and better days, but then finally, in reference to his own time and his own opportunities for service, he declared, "But behold, these are my days." It is that phrase which I have taken for the title of this address. Behold, these are your days. I hope you will feel similarly, therefore, about your time and your opportunities, so that you can come to say and mean it, "These are my days." Whether it is in a family or in a neighborhood or in the circles of your friendships, your contribution can be enriching and significant. Inventory your luggage now, and thus have an informed and enlarged sense of what you will now take to your universes of experience. Better for you to touch a few lives deeply than thousands of lives superficially. Besides, those God gives to you constitute your human circle. Your circle may grow surprisingly over the years, but whatever its size, it is your portion. It is your circle. It is your opportunity and your challenge. Do not search restlessly and needlessly for another. Meanwhile, am I saying to you to withdraw from the larger world scene or to withhold your talents and gifts? Not at all. In fact, make your assaults on the economic and political peaks of power if you like, but keep things in perspective. Better for you to possess the impressive authority of example, which is everlasting, than political authority, which is so transitory. Better for you to sit in council wisely and righteously and lovingly with family, friends, and neighbors than to trade either your principles or your loved ones for a mess of pottage or for a brief place in the secular sun. By becoming a part of that recurring drama on the human scene in which princes come and princes go, an hour of pomp, an hour of show. Better for you to keep God's commandments than to be in a commanding social position. Better for you to be a light than to complain about the darkness. Better for you to help a neighbor than to agonize abstractly over conditions in a distant part of the globe over which you can have little, if any, direct influence. Better for you to have integrity in your relationships than to wring your hands over the absence of integrity elsewhere. Brothers and sisters, righteousness radiates outward from individuals. It does not shower down upon us from the ionosphere or the troposphere. It is the same with human happiness. I would hope that you would so live, and I believe your generation collectively will. That will come to be said of you individually, what was said at the time of the great victory at the Battle of Waterloo, which preserved the political freedom of what was then so much of the Western world. When an exhausted, brave, courageous Duke of Wellington fell from his horse, having claimed the victory, and in a brief moment of self-reflection said, "I do not think it would have done for me not to have been here." So live that it can be said of you that it would not have done for you not to have been in the universes which will comprise your futures. Always keep the faith, and the faith will keep you. Your generation will be bounced around a bit, and then you will deepen your convictions in a way that will permit you to fulfill your destiny. You are a generation of destiny, in spite of your feelings of inadequacy. You have been placed here not by chance or at random, but by a loving Father in heaven who knew when your talents were needed, to which this Rick's College experience has so generously contributed. Inventory those memories. Do a little introspection. Now may I close by leaving with you an apostolic blessing. In the power and authority of my office, and out of love and affection for you on this special occasion, I bless you that you will be able to summon up the strength and courage that righteousness will require of you tomorrow and next year and in the years to come. I bless you that you will have added staying power to cleave to the truth even when the world about you gallops towards error. I bless you that your prayers can become more significant and less superficial, more deep and less casual. I bless you that the quickening that has occurred for you here spiritually and intellectually can be the foretaste of things yet to come. And in the wise selection of him or her who will kneel with you across the altar of the Holy Temple, I bless you in your relationship with your parents, that while they are yet with you, there will be expressions of love and affection and of tenderness that will bind you to them not only now, but in the ages to come. I bless you in like manner, that you will be able to increase your appetite for spiritual truth, that having been so anchored in it and becoming more firmly established in it, you will be that generation, perhaps more than any other in the history of the church, which will do as the scriptures advise us to do with regard to those who have stumbled or fallen, that you will be able to lift up the arms which hang down and strengthen the feeble knees of those who will need you, for you will come to know what service requires of you in the depth of your commitment. I therefore bless you as a generation of destiny, that you will now, with added and renewed vigor, go about your Father's business, that the accomplishments of what you have brought to bear upon your experience will now be spread throughout the universes of your experience, whether in a big city or a small town, in a family, or if some of you are called upon to go through life singly, in that valiant testimony which survives. I bless you in all of these ways, out of love and affection, but most importantly, in the power and authority of the apostleship, and in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.